Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Prepare at last his return. Your behavior our Savior discerns. I'll see you in the end, my friend.
Welcome to Tribulation Farce, a podcast about those dang books left behind. I'm your co-host, Tim, and joining me is Ivy Lee educated, scholar extraordinaire, Jennifer Cheek.
Hello, everyone!
What up?
You're really gassing me up at the beginning of this. Now, remember that I haven't been in school in over a decade.
Yeah, but you went Harvard.
So. I did go Harvard, that is true.
I felt like just saying that you're my wife was diminishing you, because you're so much more than that.
Right, right. Well, and also, like, there's some drama about wife guys on the internet
and you're
right
like,
now.
And you're, like, a bad wife, too, so it's, like, probably not the best.
Here's the thing. I'm a great wife, but I'm not very wifely, is the thing about me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I do...
Explain.
I like to do... I'm just a weird little guy.
That's so true.
I'm less of a wife than a weird little guy.
Well, I love you, and you're my wife.
Yes.
And I think that's definitely true. But here we are for chapters 18 and 19.
Woo, man. It's tough coming off of last episode because
yeah.
It was just so wild. And I said to Tim earlier, I'm like, oh, these aren't as wild. But, like, going back and writing the notes on it again, I'm like, it's pretty crazy still. It's just that last time was so nuts that it, like, broke my brain.
Yeah, and in this one, it's less, like, a car bomb and more like,
yeah.
Hey, what if in a couple chapters we put a car bomb and they're like, well, that won't work. I'm like, okay, we'll see. We'll see. But we got a lot of magic.
Yo, buddy, the two witnesses at the Wailing Wall go off.
We maintain Rayford's horrible streak. The problem is, even last episode that we recorded, we made fun of Rayford for bad episodes, chapters.
Yeah.
But, like, he had one of the cool bits in the chapter, but it's just that all of his, like, plot is so boring.
Well, right, because all his plot is, I need to convert my daughter and
right.
This chick that I used to have a crush on. I'm so sad because I can't convert them.
I accidentally made my daughter too willful.
My willful daughter has a mind of her own and I fucking hate it.
Yeah, we've all been there. And I think that this is a cautionary tale. I got a big, big scoop of cautionary tale energy from all of this.
Oh, man.
I don't know about you.
There was a lot of, once again, like, evangelical brain in this, and there's a specific section in the next chapter that I really want to dig into. But why don't we start off... I'm sorry, Tim.
With what?
Because I was about to just start...
Chapter 18!
No! You lured me into a false sense of security.
Oh,
I was like,
boy.
Oh no, I'm going to try to start the chapter without him doing it.
Yeah, you would have been wrong to do so.
I shouldn't. Yeah, yeah. The fear in my voice, because I knew you were going to do something wild like that. Scare me.
Jennifer's taking advantage of me setting up my idle game to be playing while we...
Tim is playing his game, is distracting his little waifus and his bondos in here. I don't know what you've got going on.
Neither do I.
So anyway, this chapter picks up directly... I don't like when they just pick up at the same scene.
I agree.
As the previous chapter ended on, like, why are you doing that?
I'm like, what did even happen
last
time?
Just keep right in the... I guess because every chapter has to be, like, about the same length.
And true.
Like, because of the way things break. I don't know. There was actually... I feel like both of these chapters, I was getting really irritated just by the way they were laid out in general.
You think that, basically, every chapter should end with someone leaving a room?
Yes, I do.
a strong location change.
I think it should switch, like, viewpoints. Like, if it ended on Buck, it should start with Rayford.
That's an easy edit, I feel like, you know?
I just, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know why it bothers me so much. I don't like it.
Because literally what's happening is, like, what's his name? Bezazel, or whatever his name is,
What? Who are you talking about?
Who's that guy?
What?
Who's that guy?
Bezazel is like a demon, I think. I don't even know if that is
who,
a demon.
Who owns the newspaper?
Oh, not that.
It's not Bezazel?
Are you talking about Pazuzu from The Exorcist?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what you're
saying.
Well,
regardless, it's like they're talking to him and like then they stop and then like, let's talk to each other now at the beginning of this chapter.
Yeah.
It's just like,
oh yeah, they're Big Boss, whatever that dude's name is.
Yeah, Big Boss.
Anyway, so first thing, Steve's like, did you hear about these kooks at the Wailing Mall? And this is not the last time they will be called kooks in this chapter.
Right, because again, in this chapter, or these two chapters are written, I gotta give it up. Like, they do a really good job of basically writing in general and making characters who do stupid things be the target of that ire, as opposed to having us sort of flail and be like, are we supposed to be on Rayford's side when he's constantly calling Hattie a dumb C word?
Oh my God, it's like really bad in this one. Very egregious.
But I feel like for the conversations we have with Buck and everything like that, it's not Wunderkind Buck. He's like, what the fuck is happening?
it does go in more into that.
So 5 stars all around. And, you know, the intro conversation between him and Steve helps nail that home as well.
So they initially talk about the kooks at the Wailing Wall. I do want to call them the kooks forever now because it really makes me laugh.
We don't know what their last names are. Eli and Moshe Kook.
Yeah, exactly. They're actually married. They're gay and they're married together.
Mm-hmm. How progressive of the Lord.
It's very
two
progressive.
Gays.
Yeah. Two gays and no last name.
Don't touch those gays. I'll kill you.
They will put a heart attack spell on you and you will die.
Okay,
honestly, I feel like I think this is just like a sign of how crazy the book is getting. Is like our brains are just getting jumbled with everything that's happening. So,
well, yeah, because like also they keep bringing up what happens 5 times in 5 different locations.
That's true. So Buck is kind of giving Steve a little bit of a hard time because he's just like, really? You're going to be a press secretary for Nikolai Carpathia? But what Steve says back to him, Tim, can you read this for me?
There's a sea of power and influence and money behind him that will propel him to the world prominence so quick. It'll make everyone's head spin. The world is ready for Carpathia, Buck.
I just think it's really funny how, like whole hog, full in everyone. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, of course he's perfect. He's amazing. Buck makes a comment back that made me laugh, which was, what's he going to be, Steve? King of the world?
And Steve's like, well, he would not say that. But
no,
yes.
he would call it something different.
And we find out over the course of this chapter and the next that Steve basically knows all the dirt.
There's a few times when it's like he goes, it's like as if he has been MK Ultra and his brain goes blank and he's like, I do not know anything about that.
I don't know who the fuck Eric is. I don't
who
know.
Is that?
Eric better watch his fucking mouth when he's on the fucking railings of Staten Island, is all I'm fucking saying.
Steve, did you just acquire a Jersey accent?
Yeah.
It just became evil.
It's what we talked about. It's what we knew. And it's basically the cohesion, the coalescence of all the characters around Nikolai Carpathia, you know, in ways that don't make any sense. Kind of.
But the pawns and the pieces are sure to fall into place, baby.
And I think it goes sort of to the magic aspect of Nikolai Carpathia, because is he so magical that he's able to completely pill Steve, who's the head of a major magazine.
He's a grizzled newsman.
Yeah, he's in charge of Fantasy Time magazine, and yet here he is, being like, oh, so you did kill that guy. Yikes. Whoops. Okay, whatever.
Well, I've already said I would be your your press secretary, so I guess I'm stuck.
Yeah, and it's only been like, I forget how many days it's been since the thing, but it's been very few. I think
a week, maybe.
I think it's been 3 days since their meeting with Nikolai, maybe.
Okay, yeah. It's been very quick.
Maybe. And Steve is, like, completely sold for it, you know, because, again,
He's quitting to be Nikolai's press secretary, and Buck is given the opportunity to take his spot.
Yeah, Buck's like, I don't want to. I just want to reign. Everybody's going to be so mad at me. And then, but their big boss points out, like, hey.
Pazuzu.
I really do want him to call Pazuzu. No, it's something like very like normal. It's not at all like Pazuzu. But yeah, so Buck and Steve keep chatting, and Steve points out something very important, which is that basically when Carpathia comes into power, he'll basically have jurisdiction over Stonegall. Because that's a big issue right now for Buck. He's like, hey, like, I can't, like, get down with Carpathia if he's being influenced by these, you know, evil movers and shakers in the background. Like,
yeah.
Jonathan Stonegall.
What did you think about all of this framing? To me, it felt very stupid in the sense, and I mean that pejoratively as possible, because it's like, they didn't know how the world works. Because basically he's saying, I will become president, and then finally the evildoers, I'll be able to, you know.
As if that is not what, like, every politician says.
Right, right.
Well, I think that this
Yes,
also-
we can. No, we cannot.
We can't, bitch.
We still have lobbyists, Barack.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, it just kind of betrayed. I think this attitude has kind of come up before. And again, maybe I think it's probably more just on the writers that these newsmen don't seem to know how anything fucking works.
Yeah.
Like, wait, a politician doing bat channel things and crime? What?
Is it? I hesitate to use the phrase naivete. Is there any?
I mean, that's what I was thinking.
Is there like rose colored glasses? Like, surely none of this shit is actually as bad. Surely if someone was actually boiling and eating babies, Bill Clinton would step in.
Now, that is a fair thing, I think, because that it's tough because I think there's a version of that that's completely, like, invalid, and mm-hmm. there's a version of that that's true because there's a side, like, in the U.S., it's like, well, if it was a problem, then the government would deal with it.
No, yeah, like, do you really think really? That George Bush did 9/11? I'm like, kinda, but not really.
Not
but
intentionally. he's not that smart or good at planning.
I just don't think they could cover it up as well.
Exactly.
That's my thing. But how the fuck did the other tower fall? Ain't not important.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have quite
well, it is important, gang. How did that other tower?
Someone please tell Tim.
We don't talk about that enough. A third of the trade centers fell. It's like Building 7. We don't talk about it enough.
I don't know, watch Fahrenheit 9/11, I guess.
But yeah, it was interesting being like, are we supposed to take Steve, what he's saying as word, meaning like, finally, Carpathia will be good enough
right.
that he won't have to mind his handlers.
Or is he just doing like marketing speak? Like, oh, yeah. No. Like he's smoothing things out because
yeah.
now he's the mouth.
God, you know
what
would be so sick if they relaunch the series and it's from Carpathia's viewpoint?
That'd be awesome. He's like, Adley Carpathia is the good guy.
Like, wait, you want me to do what now? Like, writer from the Antichrist, make him compelling and sexy.
We love the Antichrist.
He can do whatever he wants. Whatever, do it. These horny ass Christian moms are gonna read it and flick their beans to it. It's gonna be great.
That might be. Could someone write a book so sexy that Christian moms would flick their beans to the Antichrist? Writing 50 Shades of Grey, but it's Nikolai Carpathia.
I mean, Jeremy Jenkins has that gift. So if anyone can, he can.
Have you ever written erotica? I want to know. Have you ever? it's just in secret.
Send
I just
me something.
Let me just read it, okay?
I love it.
So yeah, they keep talking about Carpathia, about all the issues here, and they do both agree that they have a good feeling about Carpathia.
And it's interesting because each time they go back and forth, Buck kind of ends it with, we all agree, by the way.
Yeah.
Everything that's happening here, we agree about what is happening. He's not saying, you're all crazy, and I'm the good boy. That
right. No, he's like, no, he's definitely awesome.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with him.
Which I think is a good and smart way of doing it because he's so GD annoying every other time.
Yeah, if he was just like straight up against it, it would definitely be annoying. But I also think it's funny. It makes me think of that like situation where you're with a bunch of people that like believe one thing and you're starting to like not believe it and you're like, yeah, we believe that. But
hey, real quick though.
But what about this thing? Because Buck just continually has these little thoughts and I'm like, oh, this seems weird. And we know he's right.
Yeah.
So Steve says a line that I loved, which is, I'm sure I'm sitting on one of the greatest rises to power of anything in history. Maybe the greatest. And I'll be right there helping it happen. Mm-hmm. And like, when you're reading this, knowing that he's talking about the Antichrist, it's just so funny. Like, it feels like extremely like, stare at the screen and be like, I am going to help the Antichrist come to power.
Me and my good friend, the Antichrist. And also, like, when is helping a major power a good thing? Right? Like,
I guess because he's like an underdog in this situation.
The other, you know, massive mistakes and huge wars were bad. You know, yeah. Genghis Khan, we don't like him. Alexander the Great, sorry, he did some killing.
Yeah, but this one's going to be different.
This one's going to be different.
Well, that's like almost what I was talking about, like back when like Carpathia was talking about the UN and like the development of it. It was like, well, all these past ones sucked ass.
Yeah.
This time is going to be good though.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's extremely the whole vibe with his political campaign.
Yeah. Yeah.
So while they're talking, Mark interrupts them because they got to turn the freaking TV on. Guys.
This is a good little bit they do is like when they're hanging out, like, right, you gotta turn the TV on.
Turn the TV on.
Frickin' news is happening.
And again, I feel like this is such a, like, this is something that makes sense that it came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like the things that happen in this book would happen now. Everyone would just, it'd be like, it'd be on Twitter.
Yeah.
But there'd be like deepfakes of the two witnesses. They would be like this video of the witnesses crumping on TikTok.
Yeah, like someone tries to cancel Carpathia and they end up getting like thrown in like a trampoline park and murdered somehow.
Oh yeah. So yeah, the kooks are at the Wailing Wall again, and there's a whole crowd of people surrounding them that are pissed off.
Yeah, and it's really funny. Because they sound so fucking annoying.
They're just like speaking in like Bible-ese. Like, not like some of it is Bible verses, but some of it's just like Bible verse sounding.
As a white male in my 30s, I can respect it because replace all the Bible quotes with Simpsons quotes. And that's essentially the exact same vibe here. Is that like, you know, Eli and Moshe are just like, I was at the pornography store purchasing pornography. We're like, yes, yes, dope.
We love it. We love it.
We love it.
Yeah, maybe that's kind of what the deal is like for the Christians reading. And they're like, oh, shit, that's a Bible verse.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, I don't know if we have in living memory an example of something like this working well. Because you hear like the great Reformation people, they would be able to stand on street corners and shit like that. And get people whipped up into a frenzy, but
yes,
as we know, there's zero Christians. Like, we went from a lot of Christians to zero Christians.
Right, right. Well, these are not Christian. These are, I'm assuming what is happening here, because these dudes are being like, Jesus is Lord, and they're in Israel. So I assume it's Jewish people being like, fuck you, what are you doing here?
Right, right. And that makes it worse, is like, hey man, Jesus, he's real. And it's like,
yeah.
You need, what?
It made me very uncomfortable. Again, we've talked about it multiple times. The way that evangelical Christians treat Jewish people makes me so uncomfortable because they're trying to recruit them.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's what they really want. And, like, I feel like, too, like, we talk in these two chapters about these 144,000, you know, Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And, like,
mm-hmm.
Obviously there's a lot more Jewish people than that in the world. But, like, to me, like, intentionally being, like, I want to take a big chunk of your people away. Like, when the Jewish people have already been, like, treated the way they have. I don't know. It's just, it's not good vibes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't.
It's not good. Like, I can't, we like you, but you need to be like us, actually. You need to come to our side, and then you'll be good.
But not all of you can. Only
some of you are going to go to, I don't know if they think they're going to go to hell. Like, that was always, like, wishy-washy at my church growing up. Like, I think that there was a thought, like, what church will be allowed in heaven?
Wait, what?
I feel like that was, like, the chosen people.
No.
Really?
Your conservative-ass church thought that.
I don't know if they said that, but that was kind of the vibe I got.
No way, man.
Really?
No. Everything I heard is, like, they're the chosen people, and they're being punished because they turned away and shit like that.
Oh, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they rejected them. They killed Jesus.
Oh, that's, see, I mean, that's like a pretty normal, like, anti-Semitic way of thinking. And maybe my church did think that. Maybe I just didn't absorb it. Maybe in my brain, I was like, well, they're the chosen people, so they're not going to. I would not try to say my church was, like, progressive on it.
Right.
If anything, it was probably me misinterpreting what they said.
In what world are you able to go up to your church that won't let women speak?
Exactly.
to be like, hey, real quick, do Jews go to heaven? Though? Like, you mean Christian Jews? No.
No.
Not just ethnically just Christian like Jews.
Jews. Practicing. Christian Jews are not Jews.
Practicing Jews.
Yes.
Like Orthodox.
Yeah.
You would be stoned. You'd be flogged and stoned if you asked that at your church.
You would be expelled.
And you'd have to write your parents would not be able to go back.
They would be kicked out of the church.
Yeah, your dad would get in trouble for, like, raising willful.
Yeah, exactly, for raising a willful daughter. But, yeah, so the news is kind of, like, talking over this, you know, footage of the two witnesses. And they're like, we don't know their last names, where they're from, if they have family or friends.
Yeah, no one's coming forward.
They just, like, appeared one day. They right. just shot down from space on an asteroid and a meteor, and here they are.
Yeah, and whenever they ask them, like, where are you from, they literally, like, in my father's house, there are many rooms and shit
that's
like that.
That's not an answer,
like,
that's just a Bible verse. Like,
you are so weird. And again, this isn't real, and it's not, like... taken from the Bible.
This is not real. This is not real.
But, like, the writers of this book chose to make this be impressive. So instead of, like, answering in a way that's cogent, they're like, just have them quote, like, fucking Matthew or something.
So we now get to the critical part of this news.
Hell yeah.
Section. Which is that two dudes, one wielding an Uzi and the other a bayonet knife.
Very, very specific. Very I love it.
Specific. They also were like, they were wearing robes and had long beards. And I was like, Like, because I at first thought, I'm like, are they trying to like.
They said hooded. They said hooded robes.
Yeah, hooded robes.
Which I was like, I don't know.
I don't even know. I feel like they're implying that they were Jewish, but I don't know, because, like, the crowd seemed to be kind of on their side.
Yeah, no, I think it's 100%, like, radical Jews, rational.
Yeah, maybe, like, Orthodox, Hasidic, yeah. Whatever. Anyway, these two dudes rush at the two witnesses, but something spooky happens. Like, they just, like, fall down.
Yeah, and so when we were reading about our good friends Eli and Moshe before, it's like, okay... anyone that tries to kill them will be consumed. And we're like, what does that mean? Not too sure. So for these two dudes, it's simply as they're running towards each other, they'll just take a little tumble.
Yeah, well, and we find out a little bit more later about what exactly happened. Because initially, the newscaster's like, oh, the Uzi must have jammed.
Right.
And that's why it didn't work. And the other guy tripped. Just hold on to that thought. We'll find out more.
And I was hoping the other guy tripped on his knife. And
that would have been stuck and impaled himself on it.
The Uzi explode. But no, they just fall down on the ground and everyone freaks out.
It would have been way cooler, honestly, if like they had tripped and the Uzi guy shot the other dude and the other dude's bayonet knife stabbed the other guy.
Yeah, somehow. It would be kind of comedy of errors. But
they just like dropped. So,
which is pretty metal in its own way.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Spoiler. Eli and Moshe did a heart attack spell on them, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
They had heart attacks.
Yeah. I like to think the way that Eli and Moshe handle it is they don't need to. They just have if anyone's trying to come at me, you know, because they take turns back and forth while one's preaching, the other one's resting or eating or whatever like that.
Or sending out energy beams to anyone that comes near them will trip over the Uzi.
It's like, oh no, Moisha's back his turn. Eli has to shoot mind powers. But
yeah,
I hope it's just simply G-O-D looking above.
Yeah, they're not even actually doing anything. It's just God has like a D&D-ass spell like zone around them that is protecting them. But apparently the onlookers are angry and they're demanding help for the attackers, which I thought was pretty funny. Like, I guess people would probably if they're like pissed at these dudes for just like.
Yeah, cause no one's happy that this is happening and.
No, they're like, get out of here.
Sure, these two radicalists are the ones that finally step forward and try to do something about it, but still, they're like, you fucking killed that guy? Of course that would rile them up better. It's like, cause they're also like, can we get the bodies back? What the fuck?
Yeah, that's true. Like, if you just see two guys like run at these dudes and they fall dead, I'm gonna step forward.
Yeah, like, can I walk towards you with a knife with my back turned?
Like, what's the thing? But guys, though, they explain their stance. And what they say in Hebrew is, carry off your dead, but do not come nigh to us, says the Lord God of hosts.
Okay.
And this is what I'm saying is the, like, Bible verses. It's like, okay, this is not like an actual Bible verse, but you just said
right.
Like, nigh.
Right.
And yeah. Like Lord God of hosts to like make it sound like one.
Exactly. So they're speaking like weird wizards, and that's supposed to be helpful?
I think they are weird wizards.
They literally are weird wizards.
What evidence is there that they're not weird wizards? All the evidence points to yes.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I quake at the sight of them, and I keep having to say to myself that just a week ago, millions and millions of people disappeared, so of course people are going to be...
They're rowdy.
A little rowdy.
Yeah, they're riled up. It makes sense.
So, like, okay, maybe people would get saved by this if two wizards showed up. Like, we're in the rapture!
Dude, I feel like yes. I mean, look at all the shit people have been swept away by during the pandemic. People would absolutely... There would be so many weird cults.
Masks, vaccines.
All those cults.
You name them.
No, I just mean, like, how, like... pilled people got during the pandemic. Like people, all the people that are like, actually QAnon's real now.
I gotta microwave my letters.
Yeah,
my mails.
So we end this little segment with the CNN reporter finishing out saying, at this moment, the preachers have continued their shouting, proclaiming, Jesus of Nazareth, born in Bethlehem, King of the Jews, the chosen one, ruler of all nations.
All right, check it out. You're on vacation in Israel. There's two dudes just screaming this
Jesus!
Line at you. Because, like, that's the thing. It's like,
you say bitch.
I think we have to assume they're giving quote unquote traditional sermons, but all we know is they just scream weird shit.
And it's in they're screaming in Hebrew, and they're talking about Jesus a lot in Israel.
And that's why I do the Simpsons thing, because it's just like, they're not saying anything.
No.
They're just like, I'm a wizard and Jesus sent me. And they're like, okay, who cares?
Yeah, just like,
I killed that guy. Don't you believe me? Like, I guess I do.
They do say dead, so I guess so.
I guess so. I don't know. Shit. Like, and it implied that the soldiers were like stressed out by them. It is so weird that no one's able to just be like, shoo.
Go away.
Shush.
Well, I guess. I mean, have they tried to?
Do they have a permit? Do they have a permit?
Maybe they can't make them leave.
If they don't have a permit, they can't be shouting here, is my opinion.
The very last bit of the section is Buck. Now back to Buck. They stop watching TV, and Buck is just thinking to himself, and he's like, I guess I gotta take this fucking job.
Yeah, he's like, no other pretenders will take the throne.
Yeah, that's the thing, because basically they point out to him, they're like, listen, Buck, you don't take this job, someone else is gonna be your boss. And
yeah.
They're for sure gonna give you all the shitty, like, pieces to write.
And no one likes you, because you're a little punk.
Yeah, I'm pretty annoying, so I better be the boss. Everyone else is going to hate me.
All right, so Buck, soon going to be the king of the magazine.
The king of the magazine. Now we're over to Rayford and Chloe. They're in New York, and it's time to be mean to Hattie again.
Yeah, it's been so long since we were mean to Hattie. I've missed it, to be honest with you.
Like, basically, because Chloe says to Rayford, like, dude, I don't think she's going to come. Like, she has no reason to show up to this.
I think this is what I was talking about, where normally this chapter would have not been written in a way that made me think that the authors know what's happening. But I think they did a really good job of having Chloe break this down and to have Rayford be like, I'm an idiot.
What?
And also, like, spout off some quote-unquote woke things of like, oh, I just treated this woman as an object. Oh, I did this, oh, I did that. And, you know, now I'm actually – the thing that he misses is the way he's trying to fix it is by like, well, what's more important than, you know, saving your soul? Before, I just thought about your hole.
God.
And he thinks that's good. And
I see where he's coming from. Come on, I'm less of a sex pig now. I'm just thinking about her everlasting soul.
Yeah, Chloe's really good in this chapter.
Chloe's so good. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think they mean to write her in a way that
Jennifer, because they make her say, I don't mean to be a know-it-all. So.
I just feel like they're, like, because the thing is that Chloe is, like, 100% correct, like, most of the time when she talks.
Yeah, it's so funny.
So, and like right after Chloe like initially brings up the like why would Hattie show up, Rayford has this internal thought. Tim, can you read this for us?
Why should he think less of Hattie just because she seemed dim at times? And now just because she had been nasty with him on the phone and never acknowledged his last invitation to meet today, he had categorized her as less desirable
or less deserving.
This part was so fucking funny to me because it reads like a joke. Like,
yeah.
Oh, why would I think less of her just because she's fucking stupid and she's been nasty to me and she didn't even respond to my last invitation?
She's a nasty woman who won't respond to emails and yeah, I hate her for
she's
it.
She's fucking rude, but I do want to save her soul.
But that's kind of the funny thing is like they're trying to show Rayford being shitty, but they can't help themselves by also being shitty. But luckily, Chloe usually swoops in and is like, bro.
Right. And actually, she says a line that is incredible. And I, frankly, like, I want to, like, put it up somewhere. What I'm getting at is that you can't expect someone who's not even a church person to give a rip about heaven and God and all that.
Hell yeah.
Like, that is to give a rip about heaven.
And that's kind of what I mean about the two witnesses is, like, you're just screaming about Jesus to people
I don't fucking care.
I mean, I guess... people that live in, I don't know what the racism's like there, but it's like imagine doing that to, you know, Jewish communities in America. It's like, oh my God, we get hurled like horrible things about killing Jesus constantly. Like,
yeah
this is not working, Eli and Moshe. But
well, but I think the supernatural stuff starts to take over for people.
That's true the magic, the confirmed magic magicians.
Yeah, would start following some magicians if they showed up.
Yeah, but like they don't even have Chloe slip up once here. Mm-mm. In this section. And the only times that there's slip ups is when Rayford is, you know, not talking, meaning it's when the narrator or however you describe what a book is between dialogue is talking about it. And he gets pretty close to being like, Hattie is a person.
Really having revelations like, wow, she has her own internal thoughts and motivations.
One of the things I loved about it is like, first of all, the idea that you're having this deep conversation with your daughter about how you wanted to dick down this girl.
In the PanCon Club, by the way.
In the PanCon Club.
At the PanCon Club, which is the airline that was PanCon a real airline? I don't know.
I don't think so, but let's say yes.
It's weird because sometimes they say real things and sometimes they have made up things. They talk about CNN.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to Babylon.
But then they have the Global Weekly and PanCon. Anyway, PanCon is the like airline. Which I'm like, is this the airport? I just have a lot of questions.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's definitely at the airport, and I think
it's before 9/11, so you can just go to the airport easier,
right? And it's like at the Admiral's Club type,
right?
Shit.
Yeah, they're in the bougie club for fancy airplane flyers. But one thing that really made me laugh too is that Raver starts to get pissed off because Chloe wants to stop referencing, like, calling his witnessing selling a pitch. And he's like, stop saying it's a pitch.
I mean, it's what you're doing.
It is a pitch, bitch. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It is a pitch.
Yeah. And
that's all people hear. Like, that's the thing. Like, I mean, if you have ever been like out and about and someone's like trying to talk to you about Jesus, like what is different from the people that are trying to get you to like sign up for, you know, monthly donations or a picture? It's just, it is a pitch.
Yeah. Sorry, Ray.
You're
finally at the end of the chapter. He's like, well, I guess I was that way last week too, whatever. But it's like, bro, you should have said that line minutes ago in your brain instead of waiting to the end of the chapter or whatever.
I'm starting to think Rayford's kind of a dummy.
Yeah, Rayford's dumb, unfortunately.
I think he's not even a himbo implies like a goodness inside. I think he's just like a big, like,
he has old white man energy,
he's
unfortunately.
He's like a big old horse man.
He's like, I am smart and capable in the world for which I know.
Yes.
Luckily made by white men.
Yes.
But
I am respected and I am smart.
But that's the thing that I was saying before is like when Ray's getting all whiny and they're talking about, again, how weird it is that he's talking to his daughter about all this, but like, saying, well, I mean, she's not innocent in all this, too. And Chloe's like, bullshit.
What
are you talking about? Everything you did is like, Hattie is single. Everything you did was to say, hey, even though I'm not actively coming onto you, I am opening the door.
Yeah.
And
I'm opening the door and I'm giving you a little wink through it.
Right. So Chloe rightfully steps up and is like, no, this is not her fault at all.
Yeah, she did not do
anything.
Hard,
yeah,
and he deserves it.
Which kind of surprised they had her say that.
I don't even think Rayford fully understands it still, though.
No, he doesn't.
I don't think that he like really gets it. He's still like very focused on the witnessing thing, and he's very stressed because also he's like, you know, I am worried about Hattie, but this whole thing has given me a new insight into my daughter's mind, which makes me feel like she's maybe not as close to getting saved as I'd hoped.
Yeah, and that's where we go yet again of like, okay, is the real goal here Hattie or is it Chloe? I mean, the positive way to spin it is that Ray is going through stuff and he's trying to learn, but I'm not entirely sure that's exactly what's happening. But
yeah, so next we see Buck and Hattie's, you know, the PanCon Club. They meet there at 11 a.m. because she is going to get introduced to Nikolai Carpathia.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's Buck is like truly like, why did I agree to do this? And because at the time when we, like, when it happened in the book, I was like, why are you agreeing to do it?
I still think this, and it's very, very silly, because Buck says, like, right when she walks up, of like, well, I guess I don't have to worry about my chances, because the first thing she says, can I meet Nikolai?
yeah, she's like, I am 0% interested in you, Buck, just to let you know.
But they kind of spin it as, I can't tell if we're supposed to be on Buck's side, because it's Hattie, the human punching bag of the Left Behind series, but basically,
I feel like she's like pretty like competent in this section. So yeah. Maybe we are supposed to think that Buck is being an asshole,
right? No, and Nikolai says so kind of later, but like
it's does, yeah.
Very, very weird yes. to be like, hey, I'm sorry to bring up a groupie.
Yeah.
And he feels like really guilty about it.
Yeah. Like there's a part where they're in the cab together going over to wherever Nikolai is staying. And Buck realized immediately how awkward he felt and how much worse he was about to feel.
Yeah. I mean, Buck.
He's so stressed about it.
Buck, I mean, I am not going to disagree with you here.
Yeah, you
I know
have
that we're
agreed to do this.
We're getting chaotic signals about Hattie, and I think that like we should be like, it's who cares? Airline attendants deserve to see the future president of the planet, but like, no, I'm sorry to anyone out there from literally any job. You do not deserve to see
you
Nikolai Carpathia.
You probably don't.
I'm like, sorry. Only the best sense. Boys and like presidents get to see Nikolai, but like. Hattie, I'm sorry. I wouldn't be able like I need yeah. to go I need a podcaster.
I need a podcaster charging to the Antichrist.
Hey, what's up? This is Nikolai Carpathia as a guest on Naruto Revuto. So what do you think about these gays, Naruto and Sasuke?
I think they are good.
Oh, wow. You did it yet again.
Wow.
You have the Byakugan for seeing the future. Thank you.
So, Hattie notices that Buck is like, oh, I like him, but don't, like, talk to him for real long, though, for real. And Hattie gets, like, kind of her hackles up, and she's like, bitch, I don't want to act around VIPs. I'm a flight attendant. I deal with them all the time.
Right.
Which is probably true, actually.
Yeah. That movie with Gwyneth Paltrow.
Up in the air. I don't know.
It's not up in the air.
I don't know. That's not an airplane movie I know.
It's the movie where Mike Myers says, you put the wrong emphasis in the wrong syllable.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
She's a flight attendant, and it looks very stressful in the way that you handle, you know, pan-continental
yeah.
flights, which is fictional. I googled it.
And sometimes you got to duct tape a passenger to the seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you're serving maybe Nikolai Carpathia. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like you're in the ultra first class, so you have to be like really, really good. But one time, it's real stressful for whatever plot reason. And she opens up champagne and hits a French guy in the face. It's
oh,
really funny.
That's funny because he's French.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so they get there, and Carpathia first wants to speak to Buck alone, and Buck's like, oh, no, here he is.
Jesus.
He's going to fucking yell at me. I'm like, why'd you bring this flight attendant to see me?
Buck, I can get my own pussy, Buck. But I
why are you bringing
that?
Me pussy, Captain Pussy? I'm going to catch my own in the wild. But he actually just wants to talk about the kooks. Everyone's talking about the kooks.
You're back, baby.
Mall. Nikolai is, like, completely fascinated by it, and it feels sincere to me. Like, he's real like, oh. What is this?
They even say that when they're talking about the kooks, he just kind of mutters,
Yeah, and, like he's truly like his wheels in his brain are spinning so
and
hard.
And they specifically point out that it's like not very eloquent. And
yeah, he's like, he's just buzzing so much.
My brain is like, what are they saying here? Is this proof that Nikolai knows what's happening, and he's like, well, I don't part of me thinks that someone said he was the Antichrist, so he Googled it. And he's like, oh, fuck.
See, again, if this was now and Twitter, he would already know about this. He would have, like, a whole, like, social media manager. It'd be, like, a whole mm-hmm. thing. He would know about the Antichrist rumors, but I feel like in this setting, maybe he doesn't.
He would ironically change his name to Nick Antichrist Carpathia.
Nick Ola.
He would, like, whenever he eats barbecue pork, like, uh-oh, hope I don't get any of the temple. Anyways, folks. Disarmament. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
But I think this feels foreshadowy to me. It's very, very specific. The reason that this is the first time they've described him as, like, not being perfect.
Yes.
And him looking at this, there has to be something happening. I don't know what that something is, and I cannot wait for him to have explicit magic so I can start to figure out what the fuck is happening.
Yeah, and I think that happens, well, it's going to be soon, because there's not that many chapters left in this book.
It's getting thinner.
Yeah, we have, there's 25 chapters total, and we're talking about 18, 19 today, mm-hmm. so coming up towards the end. During this time that they have to themselves, Buck takes the opportunity to ask Nikolai, hey, did you hear about Eric Miller?
Hey.
Just to see, like, how he responds. And, of course, he doesn't. He is, no, like, no, what happened? And Buck tells him, and he says, you do not say, dreadful. That's his response.
Do you believe him? I believe him. I don't believe him. I don't.
I think that. And we'll get a little bit more info in the next chapter, but I feel like Steve might know some stuff.
Even though I don't believe it's textual, part of me wishes and believes that Nikolai is just kind of swept up in this stuff, and then he's going to snap later, but
Satan is going to, like, touch him on the forehead and, like, imbue him with the power of the Antichrist, like, the knowledge, and he'll, like, suddenly have...
That's the thing. Is it, like, more compelling for the Antichrist to not know he's the Antichrist? Antichrist to be like, oh, I gotta do Antichrist shit now, fuck.
Well, I mean, that's, like, a whole thing. I feel like we're obsessed, like, the movie, like, The Omen, like, the whole thing of, like, a child Antichrist. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole, like, an Antichrist who doesn't... Well, I guess I don't know if the kid from The Omen doesn't know he's the Antichrist, because I've never seen it. I need to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I do. I feel like the idea of, like, a person who is going to become evil, and they don't know it
right
yet.
Because right now Nikolai very much is the ends justify the means.
He's pragmatic,
very pragmatic. I'm not going to do anything evil, but I'll scheme but I'll scheme in a way that benefits us both. I'm not trying to fuck you.
Right, right. He's going to take care of his friends.
Yeah.
And then Carpathia and Hattie actually talk, and Buck talks about her giggling when Carpathia kisses her on both her cheeks, but it seems like they have a good talk, because Carpathia gives her his number. What we want.
I take it back. I do want the pussy.
He does. And I love that, like, Hattie's like, oh my god, he gave me his number, and Buck's like, haha, let me see that real quick. So he can memorize the number.
Right.
Buck, you were a freak, sir.
He's the world's best journalist. Of course he can do this.
Number one boy journalist.
Nikolai not only gave Hattie his card, but wrote, you know,
a special number
on it. And, you know, Nikolai says when Buck is like, hey, man, I'm sorry about this. This is where she's just a flight attendant. And Nikolai's like, no one's just anything. Everyone is equal and deserves it. I'm like, Nikolai, I'm king shit.
Yeah, I'm pulling for the Antichrist again.
Yes, he's the only good character.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, maybe Eric Miller didn't deserve to get pushed off the ferry. Maybe,
I don't know. He acted like a fool.
He did act like a fool, but reserve your judgment.
Yeah, we get just a taste next chapter, but I am super curious. Which is why we need to we need a new series from Nikolai's point of view.
What is the conversation?
Because I don't want him to be super evil behind the scenes.
Right. Did he send a goon to do it?
Right.
Or did he just, like, sit down and astral project and push him off of the ferry? Because that's kind of where I'm thinking. Or maybe even it's not that intentional. Maybe he just sent his, like, his bad Antichrist vibes out, like, lied to me, and therefore he fell off of the ferry.
Yeah, anything's possible, what with Eli emotion and shit like that, but, you know, it's possible, too, that he was complaining about how much of a rube and a bore this guy was, so one of his goons is like, oh, you fucker. It's like Larry Strong in the hit show House of the Dragon, airing now on HBO Max. Cast of Thrones.
It's a
podcast about Game of Thrones.
I do think it's really funny to think about Left Behind, like,
in general.
Divorce it from the context of Christianity being real and just read it as if it was a fantasy novel.
True. I had fun with that too. Yeah, I thought about that.
When you think about it that way, Like, it is kind of interesting. Like, it is, it's like you said, it's like a magician's fighting.
Right, because I was getting annoyed at Rey, and I was like, you know what? Take a step back. I read stupid bullshit where they have sacred texts all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe let's enjoy it. Let's give them their fantasy the way that they deserve, I guess.
So, in the midst of all this happening, Buck gets a call from Eric Miller's wife. And she, at first, Buck's kind of like, hey, like, why are you calling me?
LOL,
and
so she's sorry. Like,
did you and my husband fight in a hotel? Yeah, but it was just like normal stuff. She's like, yeah.
Did you beat my husband up in front of the Antichrist?
Before the night that he died?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but that was just like normal dude stuff. And he's like, yeah. I figured it was normal dude stuff.
That's what dudes do.
But she's like, listen, man, he was on the swim team in college. And also it was cold, so there'd be no reason for him to be outside on the ferry. This seems super suspicious to me. And Buck's like, it does seem pretty suspicious.
But to me, I think we're just supposed to accept that it is suspicious. But to me, it's like, huh? Like, he said it was a bit nippy. So does that mean he wouldn't call from outside? And also,
I think you're just saying he wouldn't have been outside at all.
It doesn't feel like it's that cold. Like, I know it's early, but it's rude to be on your phone around people, especially now when no one has a phone, when it's like, what the fuck are you doing? So, and also, if you fall on the ferry, maybe the water's going to be much colder than the air. Quick shock. You don't get ready.
You're saying, and drown. Tim, are you saying you don't think the Antichrist did this?
I agree.
Are you gaslighting Buck and Eric Miller, his widow?
I
you know good and well that the Antichrist did it?
I don't know good and well shit.
Are you on his side now? Are you the new press secretary?
I've always been on his side.
Oh my God, he killed Steve. He's become the new press secretary for the Antichrist. Then
this part's stupid.
This part is so is stupid. It's very 1995, I think.
Or just stupid.
I don't know. Buck calls quote unquote a friend at the telephone company, unquote,
mm-hmm.
to find out who's listed at the number that Carpathia
wrote. Yeah, the one that was written.
And guys, it's actually the UN Secretary General's office.
Which is like insane to me. Like,
he just gave it to Hattie.
Did he not have a cell phone? Other characters have cell phones.
Yeah, okay, but actually, I think only Buck has a cell phone.
But he's not the only person on the goddamn planet.
Yeah, but Buck is, like, savvy and cool. That's true. So, I don't know. People don't, like, have cell phones in 1995.
Yeah, and Nikolai made a joke about the technology.
Like, I remember my baby brother was born in 1997, and we had a car phone, because I remember calling my dad, like, we called my dad's car phone to be like, mom's in labor, you gotta come to the hospital. So that's what I'm saying, that was 97.
Mm-hmm.
So this is 95. People do not have cell phones.
I know.
It's very unusual that Buck has one.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's, like, a special boy, because he was doing, like, electrical engineering on the plane. So he's just a wunderkind.
Him, Zach from Saved by the Bell,
Zach, I guess he did have a... But yeah, it was like a car phone, though, wasn't it?
No, it was one of those big gray ones.
Oh, my goodness. So yeah, he calls his buddy at the telephone company to be like, who's this? It's the UN Secretary General's office. And Buck immediately is like, I gotta call Steve.
Oh, God. What the fuck
is happening?
Right, because the implication here is, why is Nikolai saying, call me in the president of the UN's house? What the fuck?
Yeah, to Hattie. Well, and Steve is like, well, it couldn't have been a mistake. He must have done it on purpose. And I'm assuming what happened was that Carpathia did it, and then he knew Buck would look at it. It would know about it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming. There's no... Otherwise, like, yeah, that would be really weird. I think that must be what's going on. So, yeah. And Steve's like, oh, okay, don't write about this. But, yeah, he's going to be the new Secretary General of the UN.
Yeah, he weaseled the guy from Botswana out and is basically like, I will give you the Israel formula if you leave. Okay, and he's like, can I do both? No, you're going to make so much fucking money because of your desert there congrats. And he's like, oh, okay, I guess, but this sucks.
Yeah, so moving and shaking behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And then, so really in the chapter on an ominous note, we have Buck saying, what did Eric Miller get too close to? What lead was he tracking? Steve's voice became hollow, his tone flat. All I know about Eric Miller, he said, is that he got too close to the railing on Staten Island Ferry. Like, again, I just imagine his eyes going, like, fully blank, and it's like, he fell off the ferry.
I don't know nothing about nothing.
Yeah.
So that is very much not good, because no. Steve knows a lot of shit, and the fact that he's weird about Eric Miller.
And, like, immediately, literally yesterday, he was working for the Global Weekly.
Right.
And he technically still is today.
Yes, yes.
And starting tomorrow, he's going to start being his press secretary.
Right. So, like, they sat him down and was like, real quick, all right, we fucking killed Eric.
I assume
we killed the Scotland Yard guy.
Listen, we did all this shit. I assume what happened was Carpathia sat down and did, like, a Vulcan mind meld with Steve and just, like, put his fingers, like, on his forehead and just, like, input all his Antichrist stuff into Steve's brain.
I'm going to put a series of scorpions on you. You have to not move in order to prove that you trust me.
Your loyalty.
And I will put you in the boo box if not. Huh? I am only kidding, but...
It is a joke.
It is a joke. I do have the scorpions, though.
Yeah, I will.
Chapter 19.
So, Rayford's all sad in the Pancon Club because he feels like a wimp. He literally, like, in the book is like, Rayford feels like a wimp.
Yeah. I mean... The thing that we can say positively is they are dogging on Rayford right now.
And he fucking deserves, like, that. I want to kick Rayford down a hill.
Because sometimes when characters...
I hate this guy. Okay, full disclosure, everyone. I have been drinking whiskey or a bourbon and apple cider, and I feel like it just caught up to me.
Okay.
And it's time for me to talk about how I want to kill Rayford.
He's not real, so you're allowed to.
I can talk about how I want to strangle him.
Yeah.
Dump his body.
They were doing a somewhat decent job of making him just kind of a prick but capable. But now they're making him very whiny and sad about himself. And, you know, it's a tough thing to walk when you can see inside someone's head, because all of us say dumb shit in our brain.
Yeah, like, it's not your business, though.
I should have got an extra tater tot. Not that fucking slut. How dare you? I'll kill all of you.
But Rayford's feeling stressed about everything because he has this thought inside of his brain. Tim, can you read this?
If Bruce Barnes was right, the disappearance of God's people was only the beginning of the most cataclysmic period in history of the world. And here I am, Rayford thought, worried about offending people. I'm liable to not offend my own daughter right into hell.
Can we fucking talk about this quote? Because this is the most, like, your right-wing family in the world. Like, well, if I'm worried about offending you, you're going to go to hell. So I got to tell you these horrible things about how you're living in sin and you're a disgusting sinner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is why it sucks to be around them.
This is the reason why people don't talk to their families.
Yeah, I'm not around a lot of other religions, you know, too much. Like, we would go to various holidays with our Jewish / Catholic friend. Mm-hmm. And so we got a little bit of dash of that. But I don't really get other things that are not, quote unquote, evangelical Christian. So I don't know how it all works out. I know that me and two buds in Boston at separate occasions joked about starting a podcast because one was Muslim, one was Hindu, and we basically had the exact same childhood, but just replaced the major figures and things like that.
Yeah, but the same shame and, it's like, expectations.
I mean, obviously we didn't have – I'm white, they're not. So it's like we didn't have the same, but like talking from the viewpoint of – conservative-ass family members.
Yes, coming from conservative, like, fundamentalist type of religion.
So, I'm worried. I can't be worried about offending people. The stakes are so high. I can't let this get in the way. I'm allowed to be such a shithead. Explains so much.
I have to tell them their dirty sinner is going to hell.
Yeah.
Like, that's love, actually, to do that.
And if you're mad at me, you're not thinking clearly because I'm trying to save you from the burning pit.
You're actually being illogical and I'm being logical by telling you're going to burn in hell forever.
Right, right. Hell's
because
real.
You didn't say a sentence correct.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, and again, what kind of came through my head while reading this whole thing is like, shit, what would I do, because we talked about this before, what would I do if the rapture actually happened and it was like the rapture-ass rapture, not the leftovers rapture? And I was like, okay, I guess I would be like, I would say I'm sorry. I was like, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say I'm sorry.
I don't think I would. Like, I mean, I don't want to go to hell. That sounds bad. I don't want to be like tortured forever, but...
I decided.
I don't belong in heaven.
I think there's only two choices in this scenario, but I decided that I was going to become very safe and be bitter for 3 weeks, like lock myself in the basement with like beans and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then just brainwash yourself into becoming Christian.
Be mad, never apologize, because I think that's what they want you to do, and that's what they say in the book of like, Rafer's like, all of the things were in front of me. I was given all the clues. Why did I not know? I'm like, no. If the rapture happens today,
Mr. Rafer, we gave you all the clues.
the good Lord above, the Holy Spirit and Jesus, all of you. If it happens, I'm not going to apologize. I don't think it's our fault. Thank you. You're God. We are just apes that ate some mushrooms and got weird.
I honestly can't even entertain this. And because I'm so calm, I'm not worried about it.
It would suck so bad.
Like, I know, like, it is funny. Like, I think...
I don't want to be a Christian.
I don't. That's not, I'm not gonna. You can't make me.
I don't want to go to hell.
This is the thing, though. Like, I do think there's a section of ex-evangelicals that are stressed about the afterlife still. Like, oh, but, like, what if? Mm. But I feel like once I left, I became so much freer because I'm like, it's obviously nothing. I don't care.
Yeah.
It'll just be nothing and I don't care anymore.
Yeah, that anxiety's gone for me.
Yeah, that does. I actually feel better about all of that because before it was always like, what if I didn't like say it right and like actually I will get sent to hell?
I mean, it creeps in, but like, oh, fuck.
I don't really, like, honestly, I don't. Like,
I don't stay up about it, but it just pops in. I mean, like, it sure would suck. That's why, like, right, I don't want to die because. Literally no one knows what happens except for Colton Burpo.
I'm not done. Yeah, exactly. Now, Colton Burpo does know, and he does think hell is real.
Because I've been to too many hell houses, or whatever they're called.
Hell houses.
I was thinking yesterday that we need to find a way to go to a hell house.
I want to go to one.
But, like, can we try to take, like, take our nephew, like, all right, Oliver.
Okay, this is so fake.
This is so fake.
This is really fake.
This is going to be really fucked up.
Okay.
You are our ticket into this really fucked up thing.
I kind of want to, though. I don't know if his parents would like that, but I feel like it would be funny.
I'm going to – you continue with the show.
Okay. We're going to text our brother and sister-in-law to see if we can take our nephew to a hell house. Our 12-year-old nephew. He'll be fine. It'll be great.
Okay, here we are about 12 hours later. I accidentally had a blunder where I messed up my time zones.
Which is probably like the most embarrassing thing you could do since you're so hardcore on I only work on East Coast time zone.
Yes.
Even though I moved to the Midwest and now.
Yeah.
And now look. Who has been the fool?
I have to eat a very delicious humble pie here.
Yes.
And apologize to every single Naruto Revuto movie night viewer. While we're recording, I got a text and it was like, yo, what's up?
Where are you?
I was like, fuck, I'm an idiot.
Damn
so
it.
7:45 is not 7:45. It's 6:45.
That's so true.
But you know what? It's probably better because, as Jennifer mentioned, we were getting pretty turnt off those ciders.
I really really think, yeah, like, honestly, I think it may have saved us from being, or at least me from being incoherent. Whereas now I've been drinking tea. Mm-hmm. I've been crocheting. Mm-hmm. I've been watching a documentary. So I'm at like my most elevated smart. Yes, a documentary was on, did this lady accidentally kill her whole family by driving the wrong way on the highway? And was she drunk? So don't think too highly of me, but yeah. You know, I feel very serene right now.
I'm just playing cyberpunk and I think that's okay. So Jennifer, yeah. You are telling us that Rayford is still on Antichrist watch and he yes. Knows that sometime eventually this dude's going to show up and he's probably going to be asking for peace, but surely it's not Nikolai.
Yeah, this is where it's like, he knows enough to be like, don't trust anyone that's looking for peace, but he still is like, I just think Nikolai's cool.
I just think that Jerry B and Timmy L think, wait, that's me.
Are you writing this?
Oh shit. I think they're just being too clever. Like, I don't know. Like, take a drink. I don't know what they're trying to get out of this.
I think they're just trying. I don't know. Like, I think they are, like, drawing out mm-hmm. the, like, people figuring out that he's the Antichrist for, you know,
or is it plot like reasons. Sort of dramatic irony of our character. Like, we know he's the Antichrist. He has to be the Antichrist, right? Because
what if
they're talking about.
Actually reading through is like, okay, Nikolai was not, and yeah. It's actually a different bad
it's
guy.
Moisha.
Even though we've already read all, like, we've read this and we know it's not true.
I mean, I think that's an interesting sort of avenue to go down, right?
I mean, it is interesting because actually these chapters are where, because I had previously, like, reread most of the book, like, mm-hmm. fairly recently, but I didn't actually finish it. And I've now gotten up to the part where I'm reading it new for, like, there aren't any of my notes or anything.
Isn't that
in there
a beautiful
any.
Thing when fresh you, book, you yeah. enter into the cool zone, as I yeah. like to call it. But, you know, it's probably just them making a poor choice. And whatever choice
the authors
is, it's wrong. But, hey, man, it would be less interesting if they were like, oh, this guy's the fucking Antichrist. Because the rest of the series, they'll be battling the Antichrist.
Yeah, so. Exactly. They got time for that. So
yeah, Buck's not going to be like, hey, Antichrist, you're my friend. You know, the weird thing is, like, we have so little. How is Buck going to become a Christian? Like, does he not become a Christian until, like, book two?
He might not, because, like, the time is running out.
Yeah.
Like, the question is, when is Chloe going to become a Christian and when is Buck going to become a Christian? And there's only a few chapters left, yeah. So maybe it will be the next book. I don't know.
Well, luckily, Rayford is carrying Irene's Bible.
Oh, my God.
Bible,
he has become – he is in the Lord's army for sure right now. He is carrying Irene's old Bible around with him everywhere he goes.
And it talks about him reading all these passages. And he's like, this is so fucking confusing. Some of the stuff I get, but most of it's weird and confusing, which I thought was interesting because it's like, if you ever read the parts that they're pulling from, it's super weird.
Yes.
Out of context, into context.
Yeah, maybe
whatever.
You need, like, I don't know, like a historian to help explain it to yeah. you and not a random pastor who got left behind in the rapture.
Yeah,
but also, again, the rapture's real in these universes. So all the rules go out the door.
Yeah, but the book is still the book. But I guess if you're able to be like, all right, we're living in the end times, and like, what the fuck does it mean about this guy consuming people when he makes fun of these two dudes?
He's eating a little book, and it tastes sweet, but then it's bitter in his belly?
That's
what
symbolism
does it mean?
To me. The interesting thing, though, is that I was like reading Left Behind, and then I was like, I should read the Bible, and specifically these parts. Because even though I was a huge Christian, I didn't really ever read the Bible. I thought it was weird.
Well, that's pretty common is yeah. the thing. People don't. I mean, that's a huge, like, you know, the evangelicals love to beat the drum. Like, you got to read your Bible. But, like, at the end of the day, people start reading it. Like,
yeah.
It's boring.
Most
like,
of the Bible is very strange and boring.
I remember when I was really young, my dad and I, like, briefly did a thing where we were, like, just reading the Bible, like, a chapter every day from the beginning. And, like, that petered out pretty quick.
Oh, the beginning sucks.
Because it's like, yeah, okay, like, yes, a creation story. That's cool. That's interesting. Flood, cool, interesting. Then you start getting into the baguettes, as people say, which yep. is if you're listening to this and you're not a Bible person, there's like a whole chunk in, I think it's in Genesis, where they're just like, this person gave birth to this person. This person was this person's dad. And it's just a list of names and it's boring.
Why do they do that?
But
it's
I also specifically remember us getting up to the whole Lot, like Sodom and Gomorrah uh-huh. plot line. And my dad got really uncomfortable because that's where it was like, these angels want to have sex with these guys. And yeah. I was like, probably like, I don't know, like seven.
Yeah.
Like pretty young. I think that actually maybe after that we quit reading through the Bible in order.
Right. Yeah.
That might have been the stopping point.
Now, Jennifer, the thing that's important to remember is the sin here is not the gayness and the what have you. It's inhospitality.
Can you imagine?
Lot was being rude by not letting his neighbors fuck his weird friends.
My dad definitely thought the sin was the gay stuff.
Yeah.
So Rayford he's all in a turmoil inside of himself because he's so stressed out that he's not going to be able to get Chloe or Hattie saved. So he's got to call Bruce Barnes for some moral support. And they have a whole conversation where they're both just like, yeah, man, like, I don't know why people aren't getting it. And Rayford says, I'm going to start becoming obnoxious, I'm afraid. If Chloe wants to laugh or run the other way, I'm going to force her to make a decision.
Cool.
This is also, once again, super evangelical brain.
Yeah.
Like, they feel like not bringing up the thing that the other person obviously doesn't want to talk about is them, like, being bad Christians.
Yeah.
Like, that I have to do this. I care more about your eternal soul than not annoying you or frustrating you. I'm going to be obnoxious.
Yeah.
Like, they are supposed to be obnoxious.
And as we said before, they enjoy sort of the pushback, right? Because it shows that they're suffering for their cause and, you know,
yes, absolutely. They love to be a martyr.
And obviously, I think Rayford in the baby stages where he doesn't want things to be difficult, so we got to give it up for Rayford. But again, these books are not just a fiction to have fun and to read. It's to kind of convince the reader to do things in their own life,
yes,
right?
This is a moral story. Like,
right.
As a call to action.
Why would the reader be meek when they know these horrible things are coming? Why are you going to be uncomfortable and afraid of being obnoxious? Why would you want your brother and sister to go through this horrible tribulation time?
Exactly. And I think that, too, it's kind of heightening the sense of urgency for the reader. Because, like, the reader is not in the world post-rapture, but the people in the book are. So I think it's making it – they want to make the people reading it be like, oh, man, I really do need to start witnessing because – this shit's gonna happen soon, and I don't wanna, like, anyone that I love to be left behind.
Right, and it's not that big of a jump to get there. And, you know, like we said, they pull a pretty big drag off of, aren't we stupid for not listening?
Yes.
Which, you know, is annoying, but hey man, you kind of gotta accept their truth and follow this book. But the problem again is how we've said, like, so much of this shit is sort of that weird, pickled brain that a lot of, evangelicals have, which is why so many QAnon type people, conspiracy type people, are religious.
Yes.
Is like right wing conspiracy in America are religious because this is what they've been trained on. This is what they've been weaned on, is to be like, you are going to fight your family, but you're doing it so that they don't go to hell.
To save their souls. So mid-talk, once again, we get another scene interruption with you gotta check the TV to see what's going on with the kooks.
Yeah, I primarily only read fantasy books, so I really miss interrupting a scene with the TV coming
Turn the TV on, everyone. So yeah, Bruce is like, Rayford, you gotta turn the TV on immediately. This is gonna prove, this proves that we're right. So now they check back in with what's going on at the Wailing Wall, and the previously hostile crowd seems to maybe be turning a little bit.
Yeah.
They seem to be like, okay, well, they're talking about this Jesus shit, and they did just put a heart attack spell on these guys, so maybe they're speaking the truth.
So the murder, you know, it's always in God's plan. Sorry to those two dudes.
RP to you, you're in hell.
But there's a lot of people by the Wailing Wall who are now on their knees, weeping and accepting.
Wailing. That's what the wall's for.
That's what you do, is my understanding. And congratulations. You're the beginning of the 144,000. Congrats. And Ray is just like, hell yeah.
Yeah, he's like, Rayford knew that the first of the 144,000 Jewish evangelists were being converted to Christ before his eyes.
And I thought this part was interesting because they make it sound like this is so much proof that their stuff is real. Like this part.
Yes.
Not the part where Eli and Moshe killed a guy.
Yes.
Because Bruce is like, you gotta turn your TV on. You're not gonna believe it. It's everything we're seeing in the book is coming true. And I was a little let down. Gotta say, a little let down.
Yeah, I definitely did think he was gonna, it was gonna be some more like sick magic stuff that Eli and Moisture were doing, but no, right. Just people was, getting saved. Boring.
I was hoping the bodies would have been like lit on fire.
Piled up! Yeah, we'll see yeah. it. Come
but
on.
But no, it's just it's boring old prayer.
And speaking of prayer, we end this little section of Rafer with him saying a little prayer for Chloe and Hattie.
Yeah.
That they will stop being fucking sinners.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're going to start getting more and more prayers as the book continues because more of our main characters will be Christians.
Ugh.
Right now, just one of them is.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So now we go over to Buck, and he is coming back with Hattie in the taxi. From their meeting with Carpathia, and he's got to stop by the Global Weekly offices real quick.
It's a real overly complicated setup.
So overly, I was trying to do the notes for him. I'm like, this does not matter.
This does not matter. Like
the back and forth of like what is going on here does not matter.
Because Hattie, for the past like 47 pages, is like, whatever. I just need to get back to the Pan Am Club by 1 p.m.
Excuse you, sir. It's the Pan Con Club. The Pan Am Club is real. Pan Con Club is not real.
I'm part of the Pan Am Club because that's who I romance in Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, I see.
Give it
I
up to
see.
My girl. What right. up? Love Pan Am.
Okay.
We have a great relationship.
Well, I'm happy for
we
you.
We had sex in a tank.
Wait,
we
are
were...
you saying that Pan Am is a person?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't understand. I thought that she worked for the airplane.
No, she works for the Nomads, but we were hooked into a tank, Pacific Rim
okay.
style, so
oh,
we each felt each other, and then we banged, and then we got attacked. I don't even know if we finished, but we were, like, if she touched her cooter, I would feel it in my ding-dong.
That's some Vulcan.
So I have no idea what happened when we were banging, because we would feel each, wow, I can't imagine.
Wow.
Anyways.
Wow, what a little interlude.
What do we say?
Oh, I was dunking on you for saying the Pan Am Club.
Yeah, that's my bad. But the she needs it's overly complicated. She needs to get back to the Pan Con Club by one, and she keeps saying it. But Buck keeps interrupting all of the plot by like I need my bag.
I gotta get my journalist bag.
Yeah, and before like when he was calling all those people, when he called back Eric Miller's wife, and then he called back his telephone, he's constantly looking over at Hattie being like, can I do one more errand?
I don't even actually know why he needed his bag so bad.
He felt naked without his phone, his new
laptop.
Oh
my god, that's truly it?
His tape recorder.
Now, granted, I say that. I also am a person, like, if I go out without my certain items,
right.
It feels bad.
But this,
so
is,
I'm, but this is Buck, and he
this
sucks.
This is Buck, and he sucks. And it's 1995, so...
Yeah, come on, bro. Yeah.
As we've established, he's one of seven people with cell phones.
Exactly.
I don't go anywhere without this damn thing, you know? It's always
If I don't
me.
Have my phone, I'm very stressed out. But we live in 2022, so
I'm
we live in the future.
I'm addicted to the dang thing.
This is almost... 30 years since this book has come out, by the way.
No.
Yeah, man, it's fucked up. It's also funny right here because Hattie had been like, ugh, like, whatever. I don't even, like, fucking care about Rafer. But now she's like, I kind of want to rub in his face.
Yeah. And
then I met Nikolai Carpathia, and he kissed me on the cheeks, and he gave me his phone number.
Right. Buck's like, is this just revenge? Like, kind of. And kind so of. What? And we're all like, yes, Hattie, you rule. You can do nothing wrong.
Who's going to write the, like, fanfic version of this that's from Hattie's viewpoint and where Hattie is the hero?
I want
is
to see.
Is it me? Is it me? Am I going to write it?
It sounds like you might. Like,
and also, and actually, Hattie and Chloe get together in my version of it, and they're like, fuck you, Dad. You crazy.
Oh, my God. Threesome with Chloe, Hattie, and the Antichrist?
Give me.
Tom Cawthorn's there, too. Who knows why?
Well, he's got to, like, he's going to have all the, like, white and like water mm-hmm. for them when they need it in the middle of their their very athletic threesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be his job. So Buck is like, I gotta go up real quick. You just stay here in the cab. I'll be right back down.
He tries to get Large Marge to just like get his shit for him. He's like, excuse
fuck
me,
fuck you, bitch.
But unfortunately. He's like, I gotta take a slow elevator. Damn, that's what life in the fast lane's
wow.
like. But as soon as he gets up to the top. He's called in to Big Boss Bezozo.
Oh, Bezozo. No, it's Stanton Bailey is his
I
name.
Was
Bailey.
Told you.
It is with a B. Not like Bezozo or Bezozo or whatever.
It was a B.
I do want him to be Bezozo now. I just want to call him that.
Stanton Bailey.
Yeah.
That's a fun name.
It is a fun name.
So him, Steve, and Buck have to have another chat.
Yeah.
And it's pretty tense because basically Buck has not accepted the job.
Right.
Steve is playing both sides because he's somehow...
He's basically employed by both this...
Right.
On this day.
Yeah. And Bailey is like, you little fucking bitches. You think just because I'm old and rich and sit and never leave this office ever, you think I don't have any scoops? I got scoops.
I got scoops for days. Didn't he call them like jokers or something?
He called them jokers or something like that.
It really was very funny.
Jokers or punks, something along those lines.
Now I gotta go find it because it made me laugh so much. It's actually even better than what we remembered. I was thinking, if we lose both these turkeys the same week, I'm taking early retirement. Calling someone a turkey, like, call them turkeys?
Mm-hmm.
That's a, like, a primo, like, old dude move.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start doing it, too, actually.
I'm correcting you, not because I think it's important, just because I think it's good. That is not the part we're talking. That's later. He calls him something else, like punks or twerps or whatever, and then later calls him turkeys.
And I call him turkey. Okay.
So I think that part's good, and yeah. I think that he should say it more often. So I just wanted to clarify that.
No, that's very important.
Yeah.
Bailey's like, I know stuff.
Right.
Hey, Buck, should I be worried that you're going to end up dead like Eric Miller?
That's so fucking funny because
it makes complete sense. Also, like right. From his viewpoint, like he seems like he's a newsman. You know, he's like, listen, I know shit. Like,
yeah, give it to me straight.
This seems shady.
Yeah,
are you gonna end up thrown off of the ferry?
Buck,
is someone gonna fling you off of the Statue of Liberty?
And Steve mutters, like, if he knows what's good for him, he won't. Fucking get away from the fuck. I don't know nothing. But right. He's like, no, I probably won't. And then Bailey's like, are you going to go work for the Seabird Monthly or whatever?
Like, what?
He's like, no.
No, what are you talking about?
And that's where he's
about?
Like, good, I don't want to replace both you turkeys at once.
Right.
Because they have the tense, like, all right, are you going to get hitmanned by the Antichrist? No. Are you joining the Seabird Monthly paper? No. Are you taking the job? Yes. Great.
All right. We've crossed all the hurdles that are important.
And then this is where we get some pretty rad background stuff. And
yes.
It's probably the first time we get some hard info and a little bit of an insight on how Nikolai wheels and deals. Because throughout the rest of this section of this chapter is kind of like Steve reluctantly confirming things that Bailey has heard.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So essentially in this part, Steve is like, okay, fine, yes, don't print anything about this, don't do anything about it till tomorrow, but yes, Carpathia is going to be offered the Secretary General of the UN job.
Right, and Bailey's like, I hear that the previous Botswana guy is leaving, what's the deal with that? And
Because he also is like, listen, man, I used to be, like in charge of, like, the Africa, like, politics, whatever, which makes sense. It's like, it is kind of funny. Like, Stephen Buffer was acting like they are the only people that know things.
Yeah.
And she's like, I also see what's going on. Like, come on.
Buck is also in this moment like, oh, God. Steve knows literally everything.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what's sort of interesting is that we don't know how many days it's been total at all. We could probably figure it out. But I need to see a fan fiction behind-the-scenes scene where Nikolai just sits Steve down. Because we don't even know who Nikolai's right-hand man is at this point.
I think it's Steve.
It's just like Haim just rolls.
Haim is basically he's just like his buddy. His scientific entourage.
I can't really see him wheel and deal. But that being said, I think the implication is Nikolai's not being a slime about it.
Right. Like, he's being, like, normal.
But this is the closest we get to where he's a slime because it comes out that he's insisting that Secretary General Nagumo? I don't know if the NG is a...
I think it's Ngumo.
Yeah.
I think that's usually how that's...
Insists that Carpathia as the replacement, but Carpathia's going to turn it down, and he is insisting that he will take the position if it's, like, unanimous.
Yes.
Because, again, this is what Nikolai's doing, is basically, he's like, I don't want this, but if you want this for me,
then I won't say no.
Right. But not only will I not say no, but I'm going to put such a huge barrier that no one will ever accuse me of anything. And it is an interesting choice because this is such a huge barrier. But as we, you know, can assume, everything that he's – we have – this is, you know, even if we're reading the book in 1995, we know that this is week one of the 7 years, and this guy's got to be the Antichrist. So enough things are going to happen that put him in power, even if it's not quite what we think is going to happen.
I mean, he already did this in Romania.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, well, everyone wanted it. So, like, and again, and this gets into the, like, is Nikolai putting a spell on people and they're all, or is he putting a spell on people intentionally? Does he just have that Antichrist aura? Or are we just supposed to believe that he's just so pure of heart that everyone is truly just, like, losing their minds over him?
Yeah, and I think one thing that I don't always give him credit for is, like, he is ambitious. And I think sometimes when I'm trying to decode what the heck he's supposed to be doing behind the scenes, because, again, they don't tell us, whatever. We get a little bit here the first time. But he wants these positions.
Yes.
But he more probably wants the effects to go into place. But I think the part that he never says aloud is that, yeah, he still does want those positions. He still does want to assert his sort of will and things like that. It's just that he's probably, as far as we know, not as much of a schemer, like, okay, I'll do this, I'll do this. And it basically turns out that Botswana is going to be the first country to get that Israel
that good,
desert
good
pill.
Juice.
So it's like, as we said before, the previous Secretary General is going to be so busy. But apparently here is where Nikolai insisted that he, the previous Security General, insists on Carpathia as his. Like
Which does make sense, honestly, because everyone's going to be like, what the fuck? Like, if this dude is stepping down, basically being like, I want this person to be my successor,
right.
Like, that makes sense that Carpathia would ask for that.
Right. And again, it's not necessarily Carpathia doing something evil because he is providing a huge boon to Botswana.
But it could be evil. I mean, but it is evil. Like, it's very scheme. It is schemey. Like, even if he's not scheming, it's still schemey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's strategic, I guess is what I'm saying.
And what we don't technically know is if he is such a peace nut that he's doing it for that. But again, it's not super important because we are supposed to not like him.
Yes.
So whatever negative thing you can think into is what you're supposed to think into it. But he also throws in another few insane requirements, meaning, I'll take the position if, one, you totally vote me in. Two, move to the whole 90% destroyed armaments, 10% to the UN.
Which we'd already talked about. Pretty crazy. He also wants a new Secretary Council set up, and this is where they're like, oh, you mean Todd Cawthron? It's like, well, he's not. And this is where, didn't Steve say something about, like, well, you know, he's not, like, the biggest fan of him right now or something.
Right.
Because I guess that's where Carpathia found out that Todd Cawthron was trying to blow Buck up. And Carpathia obviously has a huge boner for Buck. Like,
right.
And we haven't even, I don't even think we've really talked about that, actually. That Carpathia obviously, like, is super into Buck. Like, I think he wants Buck on his side somehow.
Wouldn't you? He's Buck.
Oh, of course. What a guy. But the most... The most insane thing that Carpathia wants before he will accept the UN Secretary General job is that he wants to move the UN to New Babylon.
Now,
guys,
in this world, I guess there's a New Babylon.
There's a New Babylon.
So is Babylon's in, like, Iran, right?
Iraq area. Yeah, like it's like Persia, like old Persia.
Yeah. So,
like, are they saying, like, is there? I mean, it's actually kind of funny because my documentary that I was listening to earlier, there was a town named like New Babylon or something. It wasn't New Babylon. It was something Babylon. So I'm like, okay, I guess there are places named Babylon. But like, if you are an evangelical Christian, like, you know, Babylon equals, like, the height of, like, sinners and, like, anti, like, God zone, you know?
Yeah, it was a huge, huge, huge city, civilization, shit like that. It's apparently on the Euphrates River. It's about 55 miles south of Baghdad.
Okay.
So definitely modern day or ancient Iraq, and probably had hosts of, you know, ancient wonders, things like that. It might even be in the frickin' Eternals movie. I don't remember. But Babylon is like, in our modern phrasing, like they could never be a city called Babylon now.
Because no, because it's like evil.
It's just like so
Except
tainted.
For apparently there is, I think there are some places, but.
I think there's like Babylons in like Georgia and shit.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. But you know what? There's all sorts of weird.
But like, well, I don't think we can have a new, you know, fucking mega city, right? Like.
Well, they, okay. You mean in Babylon?
In our world.
Oh, no, that happens. Like, they build new megacities, like, in other places. Not right, so much in America, but right, it happens but, other places.
No. I'm saying, but they wouldn't be able to call it Babylon.
No. No. It's wild that they're calling it New Babylon.
I don't even know what Muslims would think about that, but it's very strange.
Yeah. Well, because again, like, when I hear Babylon, like, my, like, initial, like, my first association is Whore of Babylon. Mm-hmm. Because of growing up. Super evangelical.
I think Babylon 5, which I don't know what that is.
It's a show.
Oh, okay.
So Carpathia is, he will agree to become Secretary General as long as he's able to do all these other things.
Update. I love Babylon 5, the show. It's really good. It's like a weird Star Trek, and I want to give it up to Babylon 5. See, Babylon is... 5 is like a big spaceship space station.
Okay.
And
okay.
It's really good. I don't know if it holds up. One of the little toys on your desk, one of my little airplane like spaceships is Babylon 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is just it's just an insane thing to say, and it's basically like another drop that, hey man, this is a different world than yours. Okay.
So in addition to asking for these specific things from the UN, Carpathia is also meeting – because remember when they were talking about like all the various like religious and mm-hmm. international groups that are just happen to be in town right now?
Coincidence.
So he's meeting with them and asking for them to support some like these resolutions, these plans that he has. And number one, he's wants a 7-year peace treaty with Israel. Mm-hmm, okay. That's mm-hmm, like, that's mm-hmm. fine, you know, fair, normal.
I guess the entire planet has to be like, we will not,
we will leave, we will leave Israel alone for 7 years.
And Bailey is interesting when he says that, or they basically like, Israel is getting special treatment. And then Bailey's like, as well, they should.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how to take that. Is it just as simple as, well, they have
the formula
or are we supposed to lean forward as people who were raised by the good book being like, of course Israel is important because they're God's people.
That's God's people.
I have no idea what Bailey means by it, but.
So the more insane thing is that Carpathia wants the establishment of one religion for the world, probably headquartered in Italy. What? Right. Like, Bailey's like, he's not going to get far with the Jews on that one.
Yeah.
Like, that's your first instinct. Is that's going to be the problem? Not like every religion yeah. being like, no, yeah. What are you talking about?
But this is sort of like when he's like, yeah, he should help the Jews. I think that's why it was weird. It wasn't specifically Israel. It was because he said he's going to help them rebuild their temple.
Yes.
Which is one of the prophet, like prophecies or like end time check marks,
it is,
right?
Like,
I have to assume this new Babylon thing is one too. I have no idea what Italy would even be like.
Well, I'm assuming just because that's where the Pope, Rome.
Yeah, like maybe there's Pope some stuff. Weird.
And the Pope is gone.
The Pope is
the
missing.
The Pope is missing.
Yeah, but they said missing, not disappeared.
Yes, which is different. Yeah. So I guess we'll keep an eye on that one, whatever.
Yeah, I assume we're going to get like a new pope that has all the world religions.
Well,
finally, Unitarian Universalism in power. Let's go.
Because the other thing to remember is that evangelical Christians fucking hate Catholics mm-hmm. and think that they are like satanic, like straight, honestly. Like they think they're demonic. They're like, they don't trust any of the woo-woo, like incense and bells yeah. and like none of that stuff. They're like, that's devil shit. No, yeah. Thank you.
So basically the 1-2 punch of moving the UN to Saddam Hussein's back door and moving all world religion to fucking Vatican.
A little place called Italy.
Like, goddamn, they're evil. But I mean, these are just so cartoony things to want. But
and Bailey's response is, well, I think he's a little naive, and I'll be very surprised if he gets everything he's asking for. But then he's a politician.
Yeah.
Your response to someone being like, he's going to make a one world religion is just, eh.
Exactly. I mean, that's what's so
what
insane about it. Like, when he was setting this part up and talking about it, it's like, oh, he's going to finally move to the one like currency and
yes.
things like that.
Yeah.
I think that does come up here at some point. But The fact that it's just so casual to say they're a one world religion is insane to me.
And that to me betrays that the authors are like, this is what liberals are like. They yeah. want one world religion. Like,
if there was no Christian on the planet, no, who cares? Let's just have one. Like, I don't know anyone who thinks that's a good idea.
No, like, I don't. Well, I don't want to be in it. So, like, I don't want a one world religion. Like, does that mean I got to be a part of it? I don't.
Right.
Do
like, I guess if there was, you know, the Unitarian Universalist vibe of just like
you've got your different pockets of it.
Yeah, like we respect all faiths, but
that's not gonna work though.
Even then,
it's
man.
Obviously not gonna work.
I don't even know what one world religion even means.
No, what does that mean? I don't. Like, and again, like the connection of the UN with one world religion and one world currency. Like that's just, it's just such like conspiracy theory, right. like New World Order nonsense. Like,
and part of it is like
really crazy that it's in these books and so many people read them.
Yeah.
This is why people were so open to the QAnon bullshit. It was already seeded inside of them right. all this time.
Right. And a lot of these big swings sound insane, but as we said before, it is post-rapture. There are a magic time. And like Jennifer just said, they're supposed to be big swings because it's supposed to show you how close the world is to all this bullshit, even as insane as it sounds.
And I think too, like, at the end of the day, these Left Behind books are essentially like a moral, like a morality story. It's mm-hmm. like a Pilgrim's Progress. It's like, this is meant to like teach.
Yeah.
So the characters in it are often like caricatures because they're playing
sure.
a part.
Yeah.
And I think that like all of like Buck, Steve, Bailey, like they're all like, these are skeptical newsmen mm-hmm. like of the world.
Certainly. Certainly. Yeah. Cause Buck has to go through quite the crucible throughout all this stuff. So it makes total sense that, you know, he's sitting on the front lines of hearing all these things and is both like arguing with Bailey and mm-hmm, Steve, like, mm-hmm. how are you two not freaking out about this? And yes. they're like, well, don't you agree that you're quite taken with him? I was like, yeah, the yeah. guy rocks, but don't
yeah,
you think all of this,
dick, but-,
but don't you think all this shit is insane? It's like, well, whatever. And it's interesting because I'm assuming that every single one of these things is going to happen right now, as opposed to thinking that Nikolai is shooting for the stars and landing on the moon. So I'm very curious to see what actually happens.
Well, we kind of know that it does take some time because there's a critical thing that happens midway through the tribulation to do with the temple. So
yeah.
like certain, like, yeah, he's setting up plans.
Yeah.
He's going to do some bad stuff for the temple, you guys, halfway yeah. through. Just FYI, a little yeah. spoiler for you.
That's what I keep referencing about pigs.
yeah, yeah. So the end of the chapter is pretty much just, like, Buck thinking about stuff.
yeah.
In his mind. There's not really, like, plot. Buck is starting, at the end of the talk with Bailey, they basically, he's like, okay, you write about the disappearances, right? Is that what he assigned him? Or was he saying write about Carpathia first?
And no, okay, so here's what.
I actually can't remember.
Here's what happens is Eric, the guy that died.
Right. Oh, yes.
He was going to write about the disappearances. And he was going to do the big story on what people think and
yes.
yada, yada, yada. And the implication is that he was killed probably for that and not the being rude in front of Nikolai.
Right.
Which is a tip in the bucket of Nikolai knows he's the Antichrist.
Yes.
And he's doing things that are protecting him, mm-hmm. right?
And actually not allowing someone to like get to the bottom of the disappearances
exactly.
is helpful to
and
him.
And the reason why I think that is two reasons. One is when Nikolai is obviously disturbed by the two kooks at the Wailing Wall.
Yeah.
And then the fact that, like, it's really weird that Eric Miller writing about the disappearances is such a big deal. Because
well,
I think the implication is Nikolai does not want people to think it's explicitly the rapture.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which I think is either A, he knows he's doing something and it's so weird to
me. Or he's just like, I don't think that's correct. Well, okay,
but why would he kill him?
Well, but here's the other thing that we find out. Buck does a little research, and I'm like, well, what was Eric Miller working on? Like, what was his, like, beat, you know, to see what his deal was? And it turns out he was doing a lot of writing about the building of
That's
New
true.
Babylon.
Yeah.
And the connection of Stonerville And because it sounds like Sonegal's company has been financing the building of this new Babylon.
It's possible he got killed for that. But they definitely zoom in on the disappearance angle.
I think it could easily be both things. Yeah. But like, I think we're supposed to see conspiracy and the fact that Eric Miller died and he has been writing about.
Yeah.
And the connection. I think actually Buck is probably more like, ooh, the Sonegal connection.
Right, exactly.
Than he knows there's a Carpathia Sonegal connection.
Right.
And like Buck is just generally like uneasy because that's like the thing. He's like, on one hand, he sees all this stuff and is like, yeah, this is shady, but also Nikolai Carpathia is so cool.
Right. It literally says he was the best Buck had ever seen, but it was possible that Dirk's death, Alan's death, Eric's death, and Buck's predicament were totally independent of Carpathia. Just a bad freaking, you know, coincidence.
Yeah, you just start, like, lining up, like, okay, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
But here are three different people who have died immediately surrounding him.
Yeah, and I think my thing is I'm protecting myself because I do enjoy reading these books. So I'm hopeful that they're choosing the more interesting option.
Oh.
Because I don't think.
That's so cute.
I don't
of you.
Think Nikolai being like, tee hee hee, I'm the devil.
Yeah, he's interesting. He's got his little tail and he's hiding it in his pants.
Right.
And
because
his
it's not a spoiler.
Under his hair.
A slight spoiler. When a big thing happens to Nikolai later, he seems confused by it. Like,
I don't think he's fully understanding what's going on yet.
Yeah. And
I don't think
I think that's both true and more interesting. And, you know, I think the most interesting version is that Nikolai does not think any of this is real. And he thinks it's really stupid. And he just keeps on doing these really weird things.
Yeah.
That just so happen to line up. And he's like, that's bullshit.
Because I actually think, I forget exactly what you said. Like, when he was watching the, you know, Eli Moisha, the Wailing Wall, like, my impression wasn't that he was upset. I think he was, like, fascinated by it. Like, what is this? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. That's how I read it. Like, I don't think he really seemed to super know what was going on.
Well, the way they described him is just kind of, like, staring at the TV and kind of,
like, huh,
and going, which to me was more negative than fascinated.
Oh, I thought he was just fascinated by it.
Oh, I think it's because you're fascinated by them because they're so cool.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But also, like, I think that what you were just saying about how you wanted the plot, like, to be better, like, and I think that is a division between us because, Tim, as we know, I love garbage.
Yeah.
So I'm rooting for it to be worse. fun for me.
I love two things, and the same thing, in my opinion. I love good things, and I love the Left Behind series written by Tim LaHaye and Jerry B.
And they are a Venn diagram that is a circle. Another thing that happens while Buck is pondering in this section is that he thinks to himself, could Carpathia be another Lincoln, a Roosevelt, or the embodiment of Camelot that Kennedy had appeared to some? And I think our friend Ben Aberson had pointed out, like, that probably Carpathia is meant to be a Kennedy type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they're specifically bringing up, like, the Camelot stuff, I'm like, okay, like, that's what they're trying. It's just interesting that they bring up, I guess Lincoln, I don't know, I think he was, like, an old school Republican guy, but I was just saying, I think it's interesting they bring up, like, Democrats again to compare him.
Yeah. I mean, there's, yeah, the switch of the parties, it doesn't matter if they were Republicans or Democrats.
It's like more left wing.
Exactly.
People that the book continues to connect the Antichrist with.
Yeah, but I think Christians dig Lincoln. You know, like, just because
they do. Lincoln. Yeah.
Southerners. Yeah. Evangelical Southerners. They're not like going to church and being explicitly saying, I hate Lincoln and I wish I had slaves. It might come up in, you know, later. I don't know what people think about Roosevelt, and I don't know what Roosevelt they're talking about, but
I assumed it was Franklin Roosevelt.
I thought it was Teddy, but I think you're right, because Teddy didn't do much. Because I just, like, did they like FDR?
I don't think they did.
Yeah, that's a good
point. I think they actually were like, he did things bad. My impression is I don't think they had a positive view. So is it actually very interesting that Lincoln gets lumped in there?
I think regardless, love him or hate him, they were big names, baby.
They're big names.
I don't know what the Camelot means, though.
Oh, well, that's
other
like
than, like, King Arthur, right?
Well, but they talk about the Kennedy White House is like, referred to as Camelot.
Got it.
Like, it's like a whole thing. Mm-hmm. And like the idea of like, oh, this person who is like bringing a lot of changes about. I think that's what they're, because that's, you know, the same across Lincoln and Roosevelt, and Kennedy was starting to do that until he was shot and hit by somebody.
It was the same. It was George Bush.
H.W. As book, this is the very end of it is when he actually goes into the research on what Eric Miller is mm-hmm. writing about. And Buck has this thought to himself.
If the rest of the UN went along with Nikolai's conditions, he would become the most powerful leader in the world overnight. He would have the ability to enforce his wishes militarily if every member were disarmed and the UN might were increased.
So cool. More New World Order shit.
It's insane.
UN conspiracy theory stuff. It's like, I honestly, I'm shocked at like how blatant it is.
Yeah.
It's so, like, I knew going in that there's the connection, but I did not expect to see it so blatantly laid out on the page.
It's so black and white of like, it's not Nikolai saying over the course of 10 years, we'll disarm. He's like, no.
Now.
You will disarm. 100%, destroy 90%, give the rest to us.
And if you go listen to Alex Jones, like any of those, this is just like what they're saying all the time. Like, I'm gonna take your guns, you win.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, I kind of forgot that the fact that he's a peacenik is a bad thing.
Yes, it's a bad thing to them.
Yeah.
They like war, and then their mind is like, well, sometimes you gotta go to war. It's honorable. It's
that's how men become men.
It's weak to not want to do war stuff and to not want guns. So I'm just so excited to see how much more pilled these books become as they go on.
Right, because I think
really excited for like the climax of it, because I don't fully remember what happens. I'm honestly like
the climax of this book?
Yes, I don't really remember. I have like a very vague memory of it, but I'm excited to see how they wrap this one
up. I don't remember at all, but I do know that the Nikolai government takes some pretty wild swings.
That was my memory of it.
Because I don't remember anything, but like, instead of just being like trying and sentencing someone, Nikolai would like hang them on like old school gibbet or something like that. Or my memory is like weird shit happens and everyone's like, okay. And this moves on. Also, we know there's going to be war. So I think the implication is that like some people are going to hold out.
Can't imagine the entire everyone's going to be like, yeah, sure, here's 90% of
And that's what
I'm going to just explode 90% of our guns.
Exactly. And that's what I'm kind of
give you the rest.
I'm kind of looking forward to is because I think Nikolai is going to be mostly successful in this in the first steps, and then there's going to be a hitch, and then he's going to make big choices and hopefully be like surprised and sad about it. Like, why would you stand against this peace?
He's being sincere. I don't want to do this, but I have to.
Because I think things get quite rough for everyone, as we both know from having read the series and from the series' outline, the Good Bible, and what basically Bruce says. That's why I thought the last episode was so cool, because it really outlines the entire rest of the series. So we're allowed to now talk about some of those things, because Bruce is like, these seals, these bowls.
Which, actually, Tim, remember how I was telling you, like, oh, you remember like the diagrams and stuff? Mm-hmm. I forgot. My book actually has that.
Whoa.
It has a fold-out.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man. This is not the main one I'm showing Tim a thing right now. I'm sorry. We should, like, post this.
Yeah. So basically, it's a... It's an outline on the right, it's the timeline, and then on the left is the books to help you buy.
Yeah,
and apparently there's prequels called The Church Age, and there's do we need to read the prequels?
Look how big, it's so long!
Right, and then The Millennium Kingdom, they have a book about that?
Sounds boring.
That sounds so boring. I've read up until Armageddon, and I didn't read Glorious Appearing, because again, it goes from the black to the white, and I didn't like it.
I think that I made it up to like maybe the Mark of the Beast Stone.
Okay. I read it all.
I don't remember.
So it's interesting because the first 3.5 years are most of the books, and then things get quite quickly.
Yeah, you should post it. I had like a weird block about Instagram for some reason, but I'm trying to get back in it. Mostly because every time I would go there, it would recommend things to me like, are you interested in big trucks? or like just like the weird shit. It just didn't. I didn't log in enough for it.
Mine's like, do you want rugs? I'm like, kind of.
I kind of do. Yeah, it hadn't figured me out. So now I'm gonna try to log in more.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can find a PDF of this and post it both to our.
There's
Instagram
a few
and Twitter.
Different like weird options, like versions of this, but this one with the books is pretty wild. Yeah. So I think that will be worth.
Spoiler
posting.
For the rest of the series because it tells you exactly what's gonna happen, which I think. Kind of rocks.
Well, it's...
Well, because it's...
We know where it's going.
Right, we shouldn't... Yeah, as Christians say, we know where we're going at the end of it. So, like, you know, sorry for spoilers, but it's like, hey, guys, everything that Bruce says is going to happen happens.
Yeah.
But it's just how interesting it is when it does happen. Am I right?
Well, I think that's our episode this time. Yeah. Again, just, man, the New World Order stuff is so wild in it. Like, I can't – I know I just keep talking about it, but it's so crazy.
Yeah, we have just a little bit more of the book to go. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to finish it and see what everyone thinks. We're still working on the Patreon. We were – now that we're kind of close to the end of the book, we were like, hey, you know – let's see where we get to the end of the book as opposed to the middle. You know, get the first quote unquote season
out. I can't believe we're almost done with the first book.
No, it's crazy.
I got to start my hunt for the other books in hard copy again. I have some.
Is this why you want to go home for Christmas? Is
kind
simply
of, yes, actually.
You want to drive for 24 hours to not buy these books from a bookstore?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I should probably go to the used bookstore again to see which one, because I've had the first like three, I think, right now. I need to be on the lookout for the rest of them, because again, I am not giving these dudes or their families any money. I'm sorry, I won't.
Yeah, I've also found out that I think my copy, and I've mentioned this before, I think my copy blanks out anytime they say Left Behind.
Oh, really? Is it like, so they like can't like search it to be like it's on a pirate
I have
site?
No fucking idea. But like, basically when Bailey's telling Buck he has to hire Lucinda's replacement, and then they're talking about like what they think could actually be happening. It's like, so why did his son get
and it's blank. Oh man, that's the devil. That's the devil taking it out. He doesn't want you to know.
Yeah, I think for the next book, I'm looking forward, which is called Tribulation Force, by the way.
Right, which we almost just named the podcast that. And we got scared that maybe Jeremy Jiggins would sue us.
He'll come get us.
He's gonna come kick
I'll have
asses.
To get a better copy of it so I don't have to live this life anymore.
But he can't read my copy because that's where all my notes are and my little jokes, and I can't let him know ahead of time. What they are. So
yeah. But thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for the emails. Got a couple good ones.
Yes.
Thank you.
We love to hear from other people who are similarly traumatized by growing up insane. Thank you for sending
we got some messages from some former Jehovah's Witnesses. And I just want to give a pretty blanket statement of the paragraphs and paragraphs you sent are never too long to everyone.
No.
Never apologize for telling us of your experiences. It's super interesting to us, even if it looks like you're writing a novel and quote unquote wasting your time.
No,
our
you're
time.
Not.
Absolutely.
Even
not.
If we don't
we
specifically
really
respond
it.
Back to it, just because we've gotten.
Well, I think that one especially wants to be. Anonymous. So.
Yeah. Also, shout out to our buddy James, who we went to college with, who's listening to the podcast.
Hello.
Yeah, he was a little, I think maybe 3 or 4 years younger than us. So I always love to see people from our alma mater being like, yeah, man, this is bullshit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
You can find us online at TribFarcePod. And our email is tribulationfarce@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Tim Lanning. And you can find Jennifer at Jennifer Cheek. Anything else you wanted to shout out right about now, Jennifer?
No. I mean, well, you can listen to our D&D podcast, Greetings Adventurers. I think I mentioned last time we're on our second season, and it's a good time to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to Dear Internet. It's our other show with a couple of our friends where we talk about crazy internet advice.
Yeah. As I've mentioned, the House of the Dragon is back, baby. And it's Game of Thrones goodness, and so check out Cast of Thrones if you want to listen to folks talk about Game of Thrones content. Well, until next time, never believe them. They're out to get you. Don't stand near the rails.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.